It's time to focus on what drives e-commerce results. It's time for Browse Basket Buy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Browse Basket Buy, the podcast slash webinar series that knows that the singular of data is datum, which is why we don't get invited to a lot of parties. Now, joining me today is, do you prefer Ollie or Oliver? I don't know that, actually.
I'm fine on either. Ollie's fine.
Oh, well, we'll go with Ollie. So Ollie is joining me from Sweet Analytics. And what I like to do at this point, rather than mangling your background, Ollie, and getting it all wrong, is just hand over to you to talk a bit about your very interesting background from retail to technology.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Gosh, I didn't know about that singular of data. There's some purpose of being here after all. But very, very quickly, from my perspective, I'm a retailer by background. My sort of, I suppose, major calling card from really quite a long time ago was I used to run the White Company, and I grew that from 6 to 50 million. I've then run a number of other retail businesses, and then in 2015, I was ill for a bit, and out of that process, I decided I would launch my own technology business because I'd found that, you know, running any business, understanding customer data was the absolute sort of key determinant of really working out whether you could make a business work or not. And so that really why I focused on customer data ever since then, and why I launched Suite.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's what we're going to talk about today, because I just thought that, you know, talking about data, I think of you as the e-commerce data guy who had that, as you say, that moment of realization. So we're going to talk about data and how you can use that to grow your business. So to start off with, yeah, you were responsible for delivering growth at the White Company year on year. So you talked about that moment where you suddenly decided and understood it's all about data, it's all about metrics, the ones that are core to your success. So could you talk a bit about that?
And even though it's a long time ago, the principles are exactly the same now, Dan, as they've ever been. So I was very lucky. There was a consultant in America called Jim Fulton, and he turned up and he taught me that customer metrics really mattered, and he created what I used to call the magic spreadsheet, because that was finally what made me understand how to grow a business. And the principles are the same. And really for me, my experience there was I had a very simple incentive scheme. I was incentivized to grow the business at 40% a year, and that I earned my equity on growth. And I got paid on the incremental profit I made against the base year. So actually what it did, it made me very quickly very aware of the interaction between growth and profit, because they're not necessarily correlated. And what really mattered there was understanding that what you did each year impacted your future years and your delivery of growth. And I do quite a lot of due diligence work for businesses now, where in the usual way, like every business, they produce a hockey stick. And then I get asked by VC funds to say, actually, does that hockey stick have any chance of getting there? Yeah. And that's all based on the customer metrics. So the real insight for me was I worked out pretty early on that I could only recruit about 75,000 customers. And that was still losing money per customer, but I understood I made money after 9 months. So understanding that was a first penny drop moment. And then you've basically only got a few levers that you can pull. And, you know, the basic principle of any retail is sort of selling more stuff to more people more often. And that really set us off on a process of, okay, if I can't recruit more customers at the moment, then what on earth am I going to do there? Because I've signed myself up to 5 years of delivering these targets. And so that's really what led us on to, you know, what we call five levers of growth. But that's the sort of the basis of customer data. Unless you understand those customer metrics, in my opinion, your chances of success are very much less.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned a couple of other things in there which are quite interesting. So sort of, as you say, it was almost partly about how you were incentivized as well. That got you thinking, as you say, that tied it to the metrics and gave you a really clear. So I guess that comes into sort of goals and things and how you make sure you're setting the right ones in order to drive the right kind of outcomes you want. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and I think it's really important to understand goals. So things I really hate in our world, Dan, is I hate people with a P&L that has a percentage of marketing staying constant, because e-com businesses just don't work like that. Yeah. And if anyone's working with a finance director who says, well, you've got to keep a percentage of 10% or 14% or 20%, whatever thing, you need to hit them on the head immediately and explain to him the difference between new customers and existing customers. And in terms of understanding whether those goals are achievable or not, you have to understand whether it's new customers or first of all, the value of your retained customers that you bring forward at the beginning of each financial year, and then how many new customers you need to pull in at the top to get to that goal. Because, you know, it is a matter of maths how this works, because most businesses are pretty predictable in terms of how cohorts of customers behave. And as a result, you should be able to, you know, at least have a really workable model that allows you to target the right things for goals. It's vital to us, that bit. And okay, I learned that out of incentivization, because that sort of, you know, but actually to us, it's the same for any business. And, you know, and you need to have a 1-year goal, you need to have a 3-year goal, because they're interrelate to your customer metrics.
Yeah, we'll go on to retention and acquisition a bit more a bit later. And I have to say, as a marketer, 100%, don't give me the same budget and expect me to do a bigger number next year. That is not how things work. That's true.
And not even the same budget, but don't even give the same percentage.
No, exactly.
Because it's all about that dynamic. It's not just one percentage forevermore.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I just wanted to pick up on from what you said as well is that it's almost the short-termism, long-termism thing. So you said you're working to do things now, which are actually going to pay off later on. Is that a tricky concept to get people to buy into? Because often people are thinking about the next 3 months, the next 6 months, whatever it is.
Yeah, it is quite often. And, you know, this is the understanding of customer lifetime value. You know, again, if you really don't understand the customer lifetime value, you're again, in my opinion, working off the wrong metrics. And I do think people begin to, you know, generally, I talk to people and they do understand the concept of customer lifetime value. I think what they don't always necessarily understand is the sort of cash flow impact of customer lifetime value. So, you know, what's difficult about growing a retail business is, one, you know, dreaming up a number that you're going to get to and setting up all the right things to make sure that happen. And the two principal things in order to make that happen are, you've got to buy enough stock, that costs you cash. Yeah. And then you have to allocate enough marketing budget in order to make sure that the number of new customers you need to hit that, whatever that is required. So there are always those kind of, you know, restrictions on this, and that, both of those things I'm talking about there have impact on cash. Yeah. And hence it does really make people, I don't think people necessarily act on understanding customer lifetime value because they don't understand how it impacts on cash.
Yeah. They get the general, you know, you get told lifetime value is really important, but you don't think about what is the actual impact of that metric, therefore, on everything else that's going on that really creates some sort of impact.
Yeah, really important. And again, you know, down in your world, you know, how discount relates into that and all the rest of it. It's without sort of over reiterating the sort of it's all maths kind of approach to this. There is a lot of maths in you know, there's a lot of predictability in what we both do, and, you know, and then understanding what the longer term value of that is, you know, particularly, you know, what you do, you know, it, you know, bringing someone in a discount, you know, I particularly, so in my platform suite, we have, you know, this cost of marketing discount is sort of a top number in our world. And also free shipping, how much shipping you give away, because that's margin. Both those are numbers that, you know, I believe people really should concentrate on. And I'm not saying either free shipping or discounts is bad.
Yeah.
It I don't, I'm neutral on that. What I do mind about is whether I think they create long-term value.
Yeah.
And it's the same as customer lifetime value. It's understanding these, you know, easy to say concepts. And you probably have it all the time. I would like to spend less on discount. I want to give away free shipping. Mm. But actually, all of these things is what do they actually mean overall for the long term for a business?
Absolutely, yeah. And that's exactly what we do and try to push people to look, as you say, at the right metrics. You know, stop looking at just thinking about your immediate conversion rate. Those things are important. But what impact is it having deeper? What's going on? You know, what's it doing to your business? What's it doing to your profit? What's it doing to your margin over time? What are those customers doing? It's just as you say, it's that understanding of those metrics across your business over time. Is you really need to know all that stuff because that's what's going to help you grow in the long term.
Yeah. Yes. And the principles of that, have never changed. Yeah. To be honest, while I was doing the White Company a long time ago, I started a world which was just mail order, and mail order was just lovely because you can get a spreadsheet out and you can get it all, and everything. But it's much more difficult, because just the way data joins up, it makes it more difficult. But the actual principles have never changed. Life continues as it was, even if in slightly different guises.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's actually was writing about that just generally in the marketing world recently that, the things don't change. People's behavior doesn't really change much over time. As you say, the tools and technologies change, but largely a lot of the things are pretty similar over time. Let's talk a little bit about multi-channel, because this is something people in retail are very interested in. There's this general kind of principle that people say multi-channel customers spend more. Is that true? And does it matter? Is the question.
The truth is yes, they do spend more, and yes, it really matters. Is the answer.
Excellent.
So on both those. So going back to actually my White Company example, I going back to the point where I'd sort of hit a ceiling of understanding. I couldn't recruit any more customers without losing more money than I, could cash flow or get back quick enough. That led us into multi-channel. And in those days, multi-channel was mail order, internet, then opening stores. The more digital version of multi-channel is now obviously different marketing channels, and marketing sales and channels become more and more blurred. The most obvious example is Amazon, which is both a sales channel and a marketing channel. Mm. And the really important thing is that the really important thing is if your consumer is there shopping in that channel, you've got to be playing there. And the biggest resistance I find on this is people on Amazon, to be honest. People go, oh, I don't like Amazon, or it cheapens my brand, or all this. But if your consumer is there, your job in my opinion, in order to grow your business is to be there, because that's what consumers want. And that's the basic principle of multi-channel, is that, more channels, if your consumer wants them, they'll shop more. And in my age-old White Company example, unfortunately, there's a business in the States called Williams-Sonoma, and huge retailer. And right back in the dark ages when I began, they were talking at something in the UK, and the guy said, if you have one channel, the customer says it spends $180, two channels $240, and $360 if you have three channels. And I went, so I better not swear on this one, but I was a bit stuck on how I could get to my growth targets. And suddenly there was someone telling me that I could get more money from those customers if I opened some shops and things like that. So that's what led us into multi-channel, and it's really important. And we have the same experience working with clients now on Amazon.
Yeah, and the big I guess cynical piece to it is to say, well, isn't it just cannibalization? But does the evidence just suggest that's not true? You don't need to really worry too much about cannibalizing one channel over
The first thing you have to do is you have to ban the word cannibalization once you go into multi-channel. Banned. That is the most important thing, because the problem with multi-channel is you generally lose your clarity of data. And I'm working with a curly hair brand at the moment. They've been on e-com, grown really, really successfully. They've just gone on to Amazon, and it's doing hundreds of thousands of pounds a month. So we started in January, and they've also just gone into Boots. Now, The only thing I'm saying to them at the moment is there are various points of data points we can join up, but we've lost that perfect view. And that's anyone doing a pop-up shop or whatever, you know, you probably don't get more than 60% of your customers to give you the details, you know, so you lose visibility. And all that matters is you have to add up the profit line at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then stop worrying too much about cannibalization. Anything you can do to try and, you know, keep people within the walled garden of your most profitable, great. But, you know, don't sweat the cannibalization point and sort of going to what I said, ban the word if you've got a choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Ask the question of, only ask the question at the end of the month of have I made more money or not?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that it's fair to say, and we see that, you know, this is true of lots of other places of marketing as well, that walled garden thing is getting harder and harder because, as you say, it's about where do people want to go and buy things or look for things. At the end of the day, that's where you need to be. You can't just rely on the fact, well, we're just going to keep ourselves in our little closed bubble and hope people come here. That's really, it's getting tougher and tougher, actually. So,
And also, if you take Amazon as the big, I find Amazon the sort of biggest sort of debate point on this generally. Yeah. But, we work with an equestrian brand and it's really easy to see what's happening on Amazon and why your consumer is there compared to when they probably come and shop with you on e-com. And, you know, of course, the average order value is a lot lower. It's a shape of many brands. AOV is lower. We get the anonymous customer data into Suite, so we can understand about new and existing customers and all those kind of things. But, you know, I think that, you know, we all know in that example that if they didn't offer the product that they have on Amazon, someone else would supply it.
Yeah.
And that their brand is sufficiently strong to make sure they get the purchase. But, you know, they'd be losing out on sales if they didn't. They'd be wrong to think that their consumer would be just coming to their website to buy these items, which you can see, you know, someone's broken, they want it tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's the function Amazon fills at the very sort of, you know, the very, you know, beginning level in my view.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, when I think about how I use Amazon, it's entirely for, I need something and I need it tomorrow. That's when I can go to Amazon. That's what it's great for.
Yeah. And you know, even we see it in beauty, we see it in lots of other things. It's people cross between the channels and it's, you know, you have to be there. To, you know, multi-channel doesn't change in my opinion. You know, it just happens to be a bit more digitally focused. But yeah, we've got lots of customers who are doing pop-up shops, doing all the, you know, some of the old-fashioned versions of multi-channel as well.
Yeah, I do like a pop-up shop. It does feel a bit special, doesn't it?
It does. I've got luck. I'm talking to someone at 4 o'clock to one of our people we got at 4 o'clock today, and her pop-up shop is the, you know, it's queues of people down the street, it's Instagrammable, it's hundreds of thousands of pounds in really short amount of time, and God, you're not surprised anyone believes in, when you see things like that, you believe in pop-up shops. I can tell you.
Nice. That could be the big takeaway from this, is do a pop-up shop.
Do a pop-up shop.
Yeah. So retention versus acquisition, we talked about it briefly before. Obviously the age old truths, which are apparently that, you know, it's cheaper to retain a customer than get a new one, but I think you have a very strong opinion on retention or acquisition. So let's get into that. And what's more important, retention or acquisition?
Acquisition is the most important thing to us. And the reason why I say that is that it costs you more money. And absolutely, it costs you more money. And retention is really important. Yeah. But depending on what you're wanting to do, it's very difficult to grow retention. So, you know, if you're a jewelry business, the likely metrics are you might get 11% of people to come back in the following year. Mm. Yeah. And even the best customers who absolutely love you, you might get 20%. Now, those numbers are probably 24 and 40 for fashion. But those metrics are really hard to move. So you say you want to improve retention, And let's say we set our goal of we're going to improve retention by 10%, which, you know, that is good going, to be honest, in our experience. But, you know, when you multiply those through, it very rarely does it add up to the top line numbers really going to move. You know, it's not going to really move the needle. It may mean you've got some growth. You know, every D2C business has growth because it's got more, you know, as long as they do retain customers, they've got more people in the pot at the beginning of the year, and you know, you've got more people, so hence you should have more people going in. So your sales from existing customers should always grow, but it never, very rarely, unless you're a supplements business or something with really high repeat rate, then do. But otherwise, you know, most businesses have between 1.2 or 1.5 orders per customer a year. You know, moving that from 1.5 to 1.6 very rarely really moves the needle in a business. So as a result, acquisition becomes key. Acquisition is key. I'm really not denigrating the value of retention, but that should be the day job.
Yeah.
You know, but the how do you grow a business? You grow a business through acquisition.
Absolutely, absolutely. New customers are what grow a business. We often have this, we often just try to simplify it. So we have, you know, a retailer will come to us with the challenge of, we have a very low first to second purchase rate, very low second to third purchase rate. We've done loads of stuff and we can't move them. And we just try to change it to a bit of a conversation, like what you really just want to do is sell more things to more people. And that's if you just think of it like that, rather than necessarily separating it between the two things and just focus on that, then you will sell more things. And that's a much easier way to do it rather than split it entirely into retention and acquisition. And then it's about thinking what levers you have that allow you to do that, really.
I quite like that approach, though, about, you know, your job is to, you know, move people from one time buyers to two times buyers to three, to be honest. I do think that's a really effective mindset for businesses. And I agree with you. I sort of stress that. Because you know, that is the job. And then, you know, you can set up your emails and or whatever it is you're gonna do to drive those that buy more often piece to those people. So yeah, once you've done the acquisition piece, the thinking of it in is my job is to move someone from a one-time buyer to a two-time to two to three, I think is a really important mindset. And again, not really well articulated, in my opinion, in the Klaviyos, et cetera, of this world. You know, what's a 90-day post-purchase flow sort of just language type of thing? You know, the objective here is to move, you know, one to two, two to three, three to four. And I think it's much easier to think of it like in that sense.
Exactly. What made them buy in the first place? You know, that's what probably going to make them buy again. So, right, how do you just get that person in that mindset kind of thing? Let's get on to the thorny, super thorny. It's a big favorite in the marketing world to talk about attribution and how important it is and whether it's the right metric until the end of the time. And I know you've got some strong opinions on attribution. So, what are your views on how people should be thinking about attribution?
Yeah. So before anyone sort of thinks I'm a Luddite and wants to sort of, you know, denigrate attribution, the really important thing is, attribution is, so the first thing is, I don't think most people understand what attribution is. So that's the first part of this problem. And the second part of the problem is people think there's an easy answer to the question. So people want to grasp at the word, and they like to want to know, quite reasonably, they want to know, how effective is my marketing, which is really what attribution is all about.
Yeah.
So I don't sort of, you know, disagree with people wanting to ask the question. The problem is that no one's actually then got any real interest in really understanding the topic in order to know whether the answer that comes back is worthwhile or not.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sort of denigrate, well, I'm going to run down my, you know, my competitors like Triple Whale. You know, Triple Whale was a brilliant platform at telling everyone that they'd solved attribution.
Yeah.
And the market wanted to hear that they'd solved attribution. Yeah. that no one actually cared whether they had solved attribution or anything else, but that's just what people, you know, particularly in the world post iOS, people wanted to hear. And well done them for bottling that up into a way of saying they have. So my views are absolutely fine to ask the question and understand why you want to ask the question. It's then really complex understanding what it is, because of technological challenges, ad blockers, iOS, you know, it just goes on and on, the reasons why data is not pure. And so the first really strong view I have is that the only number you need to concentrate on is, are you acquiring new customers at your allowable cost of CAC, your allowable cost to acquire a customer? And that is the end result of everything that we're talking about, or marketers should talk about. And that is the primary number that people need to be monitoring way before they start talking about attribution. Because, 80% of people I talk to, I don't reckon know what their allowable CAC is based on lifetime value and whether they are achieving that every day. And unless you know that, just really don't waste your time on attribution.
Yeah.
And then even when you've cracked that, the next thing is that the native platforms, they're wrong, but they don't lie inconsistently. They lie, but they lie consistently. So if your meta says your advertising is getting better, their results are getting better, it is getting better. If they say it is getting worse, it is getting worse. Now, that's the second thing to know what's going on in comparison to your allowable CAC. And to be honest, there's quite a lot of study around that says that actually you're just as well set for moving the are you recruiting the right number of new customers at the right price by monitoring the in-platform metrics as you are feeling comfortable about yourself, looking at a triple whale graph that has sort of a whole lot of overlapping signals. And I often do this with clients who tell me they're using it. I go, okay, well, show me the page that you use to drive the performance of your business to, and the conversation normally goes a bit bleary at that time. For me, I'll sort of stop at this point, but, it's really understanding blended CAC, really making sure you understand what your allowable amount is on that, and monitor things in native platforms.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the thing that always concerns me about attribution conversations is that it's often about playing channels off against each other, and that is just a sort of reductive place that's going to get you to. I remember having a conversation about trying to calculate, one place I worked, the ROI of email. And I kind of came in and just asked the question, like, what's the point of this? Like, are we going to, if this doesn't look good, are we going to stop emailing people? And the answer is no. Like, what we really want to do is say, how can we do email better? How can we make that channel better? Those are different questions compared to just like, let's just figure out the ROI of email. And is that better ROI than social media, for example? That question doesn't really tell us anything useful. We need to do all those things better. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think, and I absolutely agree with that, because, if you're not doing your email in the absolute best way you possibly can, then you're bonkers to us, because you're just hanging through. But the question most people have, always come to is, where do I spend my next pound? And that is a much more difficult question. But the complexity of that question is, it's about, how much search volume is there in Google? There may just be no more volume for you to chase, depending on how broad a category you're in. Is your creative any good? Before you get into the technical stuff about ad blockers and all the tracking things that go on to it, there are so many more bits which are within your control, which you can understand the results of. Run an A/B test on a meta ad, and you find out which one does better. And learn from that before wondering all the time of whether I absolutely accept it's difficult. Do I spend a pound on Meta or do I spend a pound on Google? But there's enough evidence around to give you a working model of, and your agencies, etc., must have a view on, is it 60% on Meta, 40% on Google? There's some lots of metrics easy to get to metrics that you can, you know, understand what good shape looks like. And then within good shape, there are so many more bits that are controllable in your control, your testability, in order to find out what to do best. But, and I'm not trying to be sort of, I'm going to be a bit negative about people, but people, again, don't have the bandwidth to actually focus on what is it that actually changes my numbers, and it's those kind of things that change numbers.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that pressure. Yeah, we hear that from e-commerce teams. You know, there's a lot to do. They're stretched a lot, and they've got these short-term metrics they're given, and yeah, it's hard to actually spend the time on what actually matters and what actually moves the needle sometimes.
Yeah, I really think it's a really difficult job being an e-com manager or marketing manager or marketing director or whatever in a small business, because you know you've got left brain, right brain, you've got numbers, you've got creative, you've got millions of tech providers like you and I, Dan, trying to sell them the miracle solution to all their things, and you know, how on earth do you know which bit? And then, you know, they believed you and Revlift is going to be the salvation of all things. Absolutely. Then, you know, how, you know, do they remember next month that something else hasn't become the new flavor of the month? Yeah. And are they actually using your platform properly? It's really hard to us. Yeah. And then they might even go on holiday sometimes and then they've forgotten about Revlift after all. But
Well, with solidarity with them, we absolutely support them. And that's partly what this podcast is all about. So there we go. And I wanted to wrap this up with, I like to give people like a takeaway or something. In your case, the one number, the metric that people can go away and think about, are we going to just say it's blended CAC, or did you want to perhaps suggest something else?
You have to have two, in my opinion. Okay. You have to know how many new customers you need to recruit to hit your goal. And you have to know what your allowable blended CAC is. And those are the two most important things, because those drive your profit, and those two numbers, as long as you interrelate them into your goals and your overall P&L, you could spend, if you know those two numbers in the context of your P&L, you can just spend your time looking at those two numbers.
Excellent. That'd be great. Just to look at two numbers would be a great place to be, I think, for our retailers. Right. So final plugs. We like everybody to plug whatever they like at the end. So people can connect with you on LinkedIn as Oliver Spark.
Yeah. Oliver Spark on LinkedIn. Yeah.
Excellent. And Sweet Analytics is your company at sweetanalytics.com. Is there anything else you would like to, or maybe give us a little pitch for Sweet Analytics? That would be a fine thing.
Yeah. I think, you know, everything I hope people have heard from, I hope makes sense. We try and put that into a platform. You know, I've run businesses. We start with, you know, I believe these are the things that you need in order to run your business. And you've got a greater chance of being successful if you understand those metrics and are monitoring these simple metrics and are not sweating over the cannibalization and attribution.
Indeed. Definitely. That's a takeaway. Ban the word cannibalization. Never use it again. Excellent. Thank you very much, Ollie. It was great to spend some time with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Dan. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Browse Basket Buy is brought to you by your friends at Revlifter. Promotions work, but they damage brand and margins. Revlifter's intelligent offers drive results by using behavioral signals to target the right customers at the right time. Customers typically see 20% more conversions, 30% higher AOV, 5% more revenue, and a 10% saving on promotional costs. So stop wasting discounts on people who'd buy anyway. Try Revlifter free for 90 days and they'll handle all the heavy lifting. Visit revlifter.com to find out more. That's revlifter.com.